Welcome everyone. Good afternoon. As you know, we do not have, there is no chair of this subcommittee. Right off the bat, I will just read the statement, and then we'll get into the meeting. The Housing Innovation and Development Subcommittee meeting has now commenced. It is August 18th at 12 noon, or 12:03, I should say. We ask all commissioners and guests to mute yourselves until called upon to speak to avoid feedback and background noise. For those who have dialed in using the call-in number to unmute to speak, dial star six on your phone. Also, prior to speaking, please announce who you are to identify yourself. As a reminder, this meeting is being recorded. We ask that you only use this chat function to request to speak or to announce that you're leaving the meeting so that we can track quorum. Also, to comply with state open meeting law, attendance and votes will be done by the way of roll call using audio, not by using the chat function. Up on the City of Tucson HC
Please.
update, I'm sorry. Okay. Tomorrow, well, just last week, El Pueblo Housing Development and HCD held a public meeting at Tucson Museum of Art regarding El Rincón project. That is the affordable housing development at Davis and Main. And part of the participation, of course, was the architects, Mirto McDonald. Jim Toffel was present. And it was a good meeting, bringing residents up to date to the project. Tomorrow evening, here at the HCD office in the Sentinel Building, there will be a public meeting, what we are calling a design build forum, inviting residents from Menlo Park and Dunbar Spring neighborhoods to hear from potential developers, design and developers for the Westmoreland property in Menlo Park and the 1st and 11th property behind the Salvation Army in Dunbar Spring. These are two small city-owned properties that we've been looking to create affordable home ownership on the properties, and that's tomorrow at 5:30. So, a lot going on here, of course, and thank everyone for being here. So, next on the agenda is to elect a new committee chair. And so, at this point, we'll just leave it open to anyone who wants to volunteer. And I'll leave it there. Any questions? Any, you can self-nominate.
Well, so normally I would be open to doing it, but I am pretty heavily overloaded right now. Between some things that are happening here at work and personally. So I'm really not, I apologize.
I apologize. And you previously chaired one of the subcommittees, so
yeah.
understandable.
It's gonna be, I'm not gonna do it justice if I do it.
Commissioners know that I and others here at Space are here to help to create agendas and to move the agendas forward. So you won't be working alone. You'll be working with us, as you know, as so, and it's not a heavy lift. The subcommittee will, again discuss what is out there in housing, in innovation and development, and just do some research and hopefully bring some of these talking points or ideas to the full commission. That's the role of this subcommittee, is just to create ideas and do some research on what's happening out there.
So I will say I do have agenda items. I have things I think we should be focused on.
Great.
So I'm happy to kind of help with some of that as well.
Appreciate it, Jim.
Question.
Yeah, Eileen.
So it is like I'm trying to clarify what the scope and like leadership would be. Is there an existing work plan? Is the chair supposed to create a work plan based on recommendations the commission made to mayor and council? Like, what is the
Right. So we've had some fits and starts with this subcommittee. So in the previous iteration, I mispronounced the word, but the previous committee, it did have a work plan, but it's very fluid, Elaine. But with a strong chair of the subcommittee and with our support, we can create a new work plan, if you will. But there is no work plan right now.
okay.
So essentially, you're starting, I don't want to say starting from scratch, but just creating something new.
Okay. I mean, I think maybe similar to Jim, I have some vision for what we could focus on, but what I would want to do is, I guess, check if that, I don't know, does anybody else have interest or vision in what the work plan should look like, I guess, is my question. And does that impact then?
Well, I think in terms of the responsibility, so I've chaired these committees before. It's basically you're running through, you're making sure everybody gets a chance to express their opinion. It does require that you, it's not like your opinion doesn't matter when you chair a subcommittee, but you can, if other members don't agree with your opinion, you gotta, make sure that it's balanced, you know what I'm saying? So I think that's the biggest thing. There's really not a ton of preparation. There's usually a pre-meeting each month to come up with the agenda, make sure that we publish the right agenda, and then it's running the meetings and just making sure everybody has a chance to express themselves.
Jim,
And
thanks for the
then
clarification.
typically at the CEHD overall meetings, the recommendations that come out of the subcommittee are usually presented by the chair. And so, the subcommittee itself does not have authority to make any decisions or commitments. Actually, the entire commission doesn't have any authority. All we do is we basically advise mayor and council on affordable housing issues and things that we think that the city should be focused on. That's our purpose as a commission, is to advise mayor and council. So, but those recommendations typically come from the overall commission, so it has to be put to vote for the overall commission. We don't have a quorum in the subcommittee, so we can't actually make any. We can make recommendations and present it to the overall commission, and then usually what happens is the commission will either say yes, or they'll say, well, what about this, what about that, and then we take it back and we beat it up a little bit more. So historically, it takes 2 to 3 times of presenting something to the overall commission before they get on board, but they always get on board eventually. So that's kind of it, is you're going to take a little bit bigger leadership role with the overall commission, and it's helping us set the agenda. So
Great.
that's what the chair's going to do.
Thank you, Jim, for the clarification. But yeah, just to reiterate, there is a pre-agenda setting meeting for the subcommittee, as there is for the overall committee. And you recall on the agenda, the regular commission meetings, there's a discussion item for report outs for subcommittees. So again, the subcommittee will meet, talk about what it has on its agenda, what it wants to study, and then down the road, it will likely make a recommendation to the commission to hear a presentation or to look into this XYZ project or whatever you have in mind. It's and not to diminish the work of the subcommittee, but this is not super high policy work. But it is, it's groundwork. It's establishing some ideas and recommendations for the full commission that hopefully can come forward to the city, the mayor and council. So we just need someone to say, I nominate myself. And Elaine, I think you're about ready to do that.
No, I see. Logan, were you going to add something?
I think probably, like, based on what everybody's saying, maybe the idea is that we figure out how we're going to proceed. Then maybe the next meeting, everybody comes in with a list of what they see as priorities. And then we put those all together in a list.
Sure.
And then we say, like, what are the priorities and layer of urgency? Like, maybe something is a long-term strategy, and then we have short-term strategies. And then from then on, we build the agenda and we say, like, if it's about apartment building reform, single stair policy, or something like that, then we say, like, great, let's find the experts. That's one agenda. The next agenda is parking requirements. The next agenda is whatever. And like, that's probably the way I see it looking. I would think about chairing, but my issue is usually that I either am completely open with my schedule or completely unavailable with my schedule, and I can't predict it because I'm relatively self-unemployed or whatever. But I'm happy to support organizing, creating agendas, but.
I don't mind being the vice chair and running the meetings once in a while. That's not a problem for me. It's just the other, kind of the other stuff outside of these. So
Got it.
if you're willing to be the chair, I will back you up when you're not there.
Well, Lori, you have you're the longest serving member here on this commission. Are you interested in chairing this subcommittee?
I am not. This is not my area of expertise, and that's partly why I am in this subcommittee. I know a fair amount about folks experiencing homelessness. I don't know a lot about the other side of it, so I am really excited to join the discussion and be a part of the group, but I don't think that's my area of expertise, nor, like everybody else, do I really have capacity. But thank you for asking.
Okay, so I love your idea, Logan, on the way that we build the work plan and the agenda. I think it would be really productive for each of us to come with some ideas. I have capacity, so I could do it.
Could you change the could to I will?
Sure, I'm delighted
Yay!
to throw my hat in the ring. But yeah, it's important to me to like have a lot of clarity on the scope. I'm not, to be clear, I know this is a commission that makes recommendations. I know we don't have real like authority in that way. What I want to clarify is I looked at the recommendations that Jay presented to Mayor and Council, and so many of them just feel like, to be clear, I really support them. They feel beyond the scope of what the commission actually has influence on. So what's important to me is to not waste a bunch of time doing research and talking about stuff we don't actually have influence on. So that's the only thing. But to be clear, like I think there's a lot of good stuff in those recommendations. But I would like if we're all going to be bringing recommendations, which I think is great,
We are.
I would like us to do that knowing what our real scope of influence is. That would be helpful to me as
And
chair.
that, Elaine, that will happen. So, Elaine, have you officially nominated yourself?
Yes, sorry. I volunteers tribute. Yes. And
So,
we
go
will
ahead.
all try and support as much as we can with that. Like I think we'll all step in. Thank Oh, you
you.
better believe I want your wish list,
Yeah.
Logan.
Yeah.
You better believe I want that.
Can this committee please take a vote? Elaine has nominated herself. If there's no one else,
I'll make a motion to nominate Lane as the chair of the subcommittee.
good. You want to second it, someone?
I'll second that.
Thank you, Logan. So we have four commissioners. Jim, also, are you in favor?
Yes.
Elaine, are you in favor of yourself?
Yes.
Logan,
Yes.
Lori.
Yes.
All right, you have a new chair.
Yay. Great.
So next on the agenda is what we were just doing for the past few minutes is to discuss future agenda items work plan. If you don't have anything right now, we don't have to get into it. We can just if it's if it's your wish, we can talk in general or just wait till the next meeting and we can work with Elaine for the next meeting to have something more concrete. So, how would you like to proceed?
If I could, what I would probably say is in the Housing Innovation Subcommittee, some of it might be, I would agree with Elaine. I don't want to waste our time here. Like simple, actionable things that can twist the levers and increase housing stock in the city is what I would be interested in. I think Jim has an immense knowledge about the large scale and I don't have that. I permit small scale every day. So I would love to do that, like start getting that small scale a lot more accessible. And then in general, if all of us could bring our observations, write them down and come to the next meeting, that would be helpful.
Okay. Thank you, Logan. Elaine, you're the chair.
Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, I agree. I second that, and I very much want to bring. I would love to bring, like, to like broaden the participation of more developers. I think I recognize the huge impact of the big developers bringing housing to scale. Like, and I have heard you, Jim, talk about a lot of barriers that I definitely. I'll be honest. I have. I'm like Lori, right? I come from homelessness. So that's where my deepest expertise is. I'm building expertise in the like infill development and small scale building because that's kind of, I think, a big part of the solution. But I, Jim, if you wouldn't mind like maybe sitting with me one day over coffee or something, talking about some of the big, I read the QAP. I think I understand LIHTC basically, but I don't understand it enough to actually know what the barriers are on the ground.
Sure. Yeah.
So it would be for me, it's helpful to like kind of segregate these different buckets of interventions to Logan's point, where like small things can be. I also, to be clear, am super amped to like bring forward recommendations that are very bold and big, even if we're not gonna spend a bunch of time on them, just to like just broaden the window of what's possible and make it clear to mayor and council that like people do want big stuff. Also, amped on single stair, to be honest. So I think there's ways we can have these different buckets and yeah. But yeah, like I said, I've managed enough committees and been on enough commissions to know that like sometimes it can become performative and I just have no interest in doing any of that. And so I want to like really focus on what's actionable, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy. In fact, I'm happy just given this subcommittee to do a quick presentation, kind of LIHTC 101,
That'd be great,
if
I
you
think.
guys would like. And I can, I've done that. I've got a presentation I've done a couple times before. Just kind of talks about the different programs, how they work financially, and how deals are put together. And then I'm happy to talk about some of the challenges that we have in Southern Arizona and the state. It's really tough right now in the LIHTC world, especially for 4% tax credits. The 9% are still basically okay, although some of those are in trouble too.
Yeah.
But the 4%, last year there were 60 projects submitted to the state for the 4%. And there was not a single project in Tucson submitted, or Pima County. So Tucson has unique challenges, and unfortunately for us, most of the things that will impact our ability to get jobs done down here, the city doesn't have control over. The state does. But I want to use the mayor's relationship with the governor to try to influence some state policy. There's things that we can do at the state level that will have a huge impact on us here locally. And I mean, that's kind of where my focus is right now, is trying to affect state level policy. I've had conversations with a lot of people in the state house and the state senate to talk about affordable housing policy. Including Warren Peterson, but he is pretty much anti-affordable housing. But there might be some things that the governor can do to help kind of get deals done. The last drawing was done in April, and I think 60 or 70% of the projects drawn have returned their credits, because they can't figure out how to make them work. So there is a statewide issue right now where projects are not moving forward because they just can't work. And so throwing money at it is not always the best answer. That's historically what everybody's answer has been. But I think if there are things that they can do to reduce regulation and bring costs down, that's going to be way more beneficial than just throwing money at it.
Can I ask a question, Jim, that might be really ignorant, but again, this is not my wheelhouse. When you said the reasons why Tucson is having some trouble getting products down here is at the state level, why wouldn't that also affect Phoenix? Because if you're saying Tucson isn't getting any, but you're not saying Phoenix isn't getting any, I'm unclear how state level policy wouldn't affect the rest of the state as well.
It's a little counterintuitive, but because rents are dictated by area median incomes, and Tucson's area median income is 20% below Phoenix, projects don't pencil here. So it's counterintuitive that the communities with the highest area incomes are the ones that get the most affordable housing. And the places that have the lowest incomes get the least. It's exact opposite of how it should be.
That's very helpful as an explanation and also infuriating, so thank you.
Well, yeah, that's my point. And I mean, that's the stuff that I'm talking to about these people is, the places that need it the most are getting it the least. And the places, and so what's happening now is Phoenix is actually getting overbuilt with 4% affordable housing projects, and they're not leasing up. And so now, there's like Dominion did four or five, like 500 unit projects around the valley, and they're like 10, 20% leased. So they're absolutely taking a bloodbath right now because they can't lease up. And these things have been done since the beginning of the year. So they can't lease them up because Phoenix has been overbuilt. Meanwhile, Casa Grande is able to use the Phoenix area median incomes. There's been probably three or four times the amount of affordable housing projects built in Casa Grande as Tucson. And, Casa Grande is what, 150, 200,000 people? It's 20% the size of Tucson. But because they can use the higher area median incomes, they can make it work there.
Well, there you go.
So,
Thank you for that, Jim.
and yeah, and with that, there's like you're saying that a lot of it is going to be state policy. And then, do you feel like there are specific levers that the city can start to do? The other thing, I guess, one of the other things you brought up is like it's hard for us to piece together a project that functions. And part of that being regulation, part of it being the funding, part of it being the median incomes. Am I understanding that correctly?
Well, so there's some bigger challenges right now to the LIHTC program. So let's kind of table this because there's other stuff we need to talk about. And let's just put as an agenda item on the next meeting. By the way, before we do that, when is the next meeting?
For
Is
this
it,
group.
yeah, is it this 8th of September?
Give me a moment, Jim, and I'll look that up.
I believe that's what the Zoom invitation had for the next one.
Yes, it is September 8th.
I'm going to be in a boat in the middle of the Pacific
Oh, can we come?
with no internet.
Yeah, we'll join that meeting.
We'll definitely be there.
Yeah, we'll meet you there, Jim. Thanks for the invite.
Send us a GPS coordinate.
We like the no internet part.
So either I have to get either I'll have to do it the following meeting or we need to push it a week or something. I apologize.
Maybe then the next meeting, I would be happy to help coordinate. Maybe we get like code issues because that's something we could bring something like Post Mirta McDonald, and like I could talk to small scale issues that we generally see with middle housing and ADUs. Because I think that's the other thing is like great if we can get money or not, but if the process is always so bogged down by policy that it takes years to get anything done, then I think that's one of the other approaches is make the process of building easier.
May I suggest that I can work with Elaine prior to the September 8th meeting, establish an agenda. In the meantime, if Jim, Logan, Lori, if you want to submit some ideas for not just the September 8th agenda, but future agendas, and from that we can start working on creating an agenda for the 8th and beyond.
Yeah, I think I actually gave that LIHTC presentation to the overall commission about 4 years ago,
Well, time for a
or
new one. We have new
maybe a
curriculum.
little bit longer. Just kind of talk about how the program works.
Yeah.
Great.
I
So.
may also, just as reference for folks, I'll do my best to not bombard, but I think there's just like a lot of plans at the city, at the jurisdictional level. This thing you're talking about with the code updates, like there's just like so many things happening. I may send a few things for us to look at alongside the recommendations that went to mayor and council. Because again, I think there are some things that other players are already moving, and then there's things that are identified as needs, but other players maybe aren't moving. And I think that would help us understand what our role could be like directed at.
So there's one thing that we might want to loop in development services on, and I'm not sure, Neto, if this is better at the subcommittee level or overall commission level. But Corin kind of pulled me aside after our last almost meeting and told me that the county has adopted the 2024 IECC code, International Energy Conservation Code. The IECC code has made significant changes to the energy performance of buildings. And depending on how it's adopted, it could raise costs for new construction by up to about $20,000 a door. It's not cheap stuff. Everything's got to be solar ready, EV chargers, there's a whole bunch of stuff that's in there. And so the conversation is always affordability versus, energy usage. And how do you balance those two things? Because, co construction costs have gone up a lot in the last decade. And a lot of it's inflation, but a lot of it is because of changes to the code.
Right.
Okay. Well, again, that's an agenda item, a consideration.
So they're going to start having public meetings on that here pretty soon, but it would be good, I think, for maybe the Housing Commission to chime in on that.
Okay. Thank you. Alan is coming in.
Hey,
So
Alan, good news. We elected you chair.
you stole my thunder. He won't even come on. Alan won't even come on.
That's what happens when you're late, bud.
He just closes his meeting and dips. We never hear from him again.
Just anyway, okay.
Okay.
Yeah. So Alan, if you can hear us, Elaine McPherson generously volunteered to be the new chair of the subcommittee.
Thank you, Elaine.
Happy to serve, Alan.
And the group was generally discussing, Alan, some ideas for the next agenda meeting and future agenda meetings. And HCD staff will work with Elaine to create, and the commission and the committee to create an agenda for the 8th and following the 8th.
Yeah, so Alan, something we talked about before you got here, as we prepare a work plan, I think we just all are going to bring our ideas for what we think are, could be priorities for the subcommittee that might ideally make it to the commission and then maybe to right to mayor and council. So think about things that you think are relevant. Something I asked for was just like clarity on our scope and what we're able to meaningfully influence. And so I might also be sending around a few pieces. There's just like, I mean, there's the Pro Housing Grant, there's the Regional Affordable Housing Plan, there's the recommendations that were made a few weeks ago. I think there's a lot of stuff that we need to kind of reconcile to understand what our like actual role is. And so just you do unfortunately have homework. Sorry.
So you're talking about the commission as a whole or this subcommittee when you're.
This subcommittee, the
Yeah,
eighth.
okay, that's what I thought.
Yes. So then we just, yeah, I just want us to kind of wrap our arms around what it is we're actually charged with. So
Because the name of it, Housing Innovation and Development Subcommittee, doesn't help me understand what we're doing.
yeah.
Yeah, go ahead, Logan.
I was going to say a clarifying question. So, if we're, I think we can kind of interpret that how we want, but part of it is like, this is another question to clarify. Are we allowed to have like Anchaneka present and talk about challenges that they're facing with their projects when they're in the process of building them, and if there are patterns or things that they're seeing or things that they could use support in changes with?
That's a good idea.
I can't speak for Anne, but certainly can broach her with the idea, the suggestion, the request to make a presentation to the subcommittee.
Okay. I mean, I hope
She might
so.
want to present that to the overall committee, though, I think, if she does that.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah. Maybe we just get a quick response because she's aside talked to me before about like the stone and oracle project. There's like anthropology issues or archaeology
Archaeology.
issues, or and so I think some of it might be like creating clear policies from her end that help calm the community down so that there's less resistance. Like that might be another thing we explore is how do we make development positive enough that it doesn't get rejection from community.
Exactly. Yeah, I think to your point, Logan, I imagine. And to answer your question, Al, I imagine what we are doing is trying to tweak these fixes, right, to make development better. And then the other subcommittee is then communicating what these changes are to the broader public, right? Because they're, my understanding of that subcommittee is they're charged with like the advocacy and outreach piece. And so
Engagement and communication.
we are kind of like getting into the weeds in a way that is probably inaccessible to most people because it's like a lot of terminology and a lot of like just like insider knowledge of being a developer, large and small. But like we need to communicate with that subcommittee so they can then like carry that forward and like do the stuff that quite frankly I hate, which is like social media or whatever.
And part of what you missed was so far, Jim has told us that he would like to give a LIHTC presentation to describe the challenges that, like, how the process works, the challenges that we face in Southern Arizona. We discussed having discussions with different experts about policy change in code to make housing more accessible or like less resistance, less process. And then just barely the idea of like, how do we make the community feel more comfortable? How do we make development serve the community so the communities has like clear boundaries and knows how to navigate it and doesn't push back as much. Stuff around that realm is what we're so far brainstorming.
I definitely, I mean, very eager about the LIHTC presentation. I learned at the last meeting, Jim, that that was kind of your significant expertise in that area, and I'm eager to learn about that. So that sounds really good. And then everything you just said, Logan, I certainly understand and agree with. I think there's always going to be people that are mad and are going to push back, but limiting it is what your goal. That's a reasonable goal, to try to get as much of that out of the way as you can.
Yeah. There's also groups. Part of the planning commission is one of the members is a land use, like a researches land use. So they look at what developers can do with a parcel. And it might be good to talk with them and say, like, hey, when somebody's looking at a parcel, why do they always choose a drive-through over apartments? Or like something like that, where we could say, how do we get the levers changed so that
That would
we
be
don't just.
marvelous.
Yeah, we don't just build another drive-through next to another drive-through.
Every new development, you know, that happens is a freestanding building with a drive-through.
Yes.
Annoying to me.
Yes. I think most of the community is pretty upset by that. But right now, the incentives, for some reason, are pushing everything in that direction and not in
What are
other.
those incentives? I have no idea what they are.
Yeah, I
I have no
think.
idea.
Yeah. And so we might bring them in. A lot of it is like by right development. You can meet it and immediately and cheaply build a drive-through, and everything else takes process and parking requirements. And the CCT tool is new, but it's not being used as much as we would want it to, which is like allows you to build apartment buildings styled kind of like the Mercado District, where it has higher density that steps down to a neighborhood scale. But I think, again, there's just more process and cost. And process cost and time cause people to not do things. I think we could get someone to talk through that.
I went to Transit T this morning to pick up something, and the woman that helped me said, "Well, this is the first time someone's been here on a bike like this," which seems kind of dumb. My answer was, "Well, I go there through there on a bike all the time. She just hasn't seen me, but maybe I'm the only one."
I've been rejected from drive-throughs on foot or on a bike.
I have two. Wells Fargo Bank famously, in my mind, told me I couldn't go in the drive-through because of insurance. I'm thinking, well, it's okay to ride my bike through the parking lot to park it there, but I can't ride through the drive-through. I couldn't make it make any sense.
My hometown, which is a small town, people would ride horses to the drive-through. It's a real thing.
I think we just need to start requiring a horse parking at every apartment building.
Exactly. Gotta have a tie rail. Come
Come
on,
on, no.
everybody.
Come on, Jim. We're raising the price of doors. Horse accessibility.
That'll be extremely well received by the development community. I think that's a great idea.
Maybe the conservative state legislature would get behind it, though.
Oh, 1,000%.
They're like, bring back traditional America.
Then we need horse lanes on our streets.
No, it's the whole thing's based on the mythic called
buggy
American
lanes.
cowboy. That's rugged individualism. That's the cowboy epitomizes that.
I'm
Horses
into
scare the
it.
crap out of me. They have a brain of their own. They don't always listen to us.
I guess, So like maybe land use as something to be considering. So maybe, and this is, it seems like this is a little bit of a brainstorming session, and after this we'll all kind of like gather our own thoughts and maybe join an email thread and put together a list, compile a list. The issues I see from like a small scale thing is parking requirements. I think they're arbitrary. They often dictate everything, slow the process down, and raise costs. That's almost been the largest inhibitor from most developments that I've seen. So I would like to address that.
I agree with that entirely. I don't have expertise in it, but it just makes sense to me that parking minimums drive too much and without any good reason.
And most people will build the parking already that matches the demand. I've just seen veterans housing have a massive parking lot that takes up half the land and it's unhoused veterans. So there's two cars in the parking lot for the entire existence of the project.
And then you drive by Park Mall or Tucson Mall, and there's just huge acreage of parking that nobody uses.
And I think it's just like whether people build it or not having the requirement that it goes through a large process and take a lot of time for me would. I think a lot of things like Jim talked about energy efficiency. Like, I'm 100% on board for energy efficiency, but I do think that it needs to be a more nuanced conversation because things like from an ADU perspective, you have to have the ADU solar ready, but you're not allowed to use the sub panel of an ADU to run the solar panels into it. You have to go back to the main panel. So there's no point in making the ADU solar ready. And there are all these like little things that end up taking up a lot of time and process that end up making every project is a non 100% compliant. So you want to have parameters there to protect the public, but you also don't want to bog down everything with an annoying process where you have the same exact plan through every level of stages, but it just takes new time and justifications and conversations to get it through each of the layers.
Thanks for everybody's patience and having me come late too, by the way. My morning was not the way I planned it at all.
No worries. Oh yeah, they also required for ADUs, which are generally seen in backyards, an electric car charging space. So it's like you're not driving an electric car back into your backyard often. So
Wait, they require an EV space for ADUs? Did I hear that correctly?
the original code did. They did remove it. We were pushing back because we're like, this is nonsense. You cannot, like, most of these are in a backyard, so it doesn't make
That's
sense.
crazy.
So everything, like even the middle housing code amendment, has a requirement for trees, but the trees have to be a certain spacing from both the sidewalk and the residence. And so if you have an existing tree, that doesn't count if it doesn't fit within those parameters. So anytime we add layers to the process, it has good intentions, but it ends up slowing down everything and making it where, like, oh, do you want me to chop down this mature mesquite tree so I can plant a baby mesquite tree? Or are we going to allow it to be 1 foot off of the requirements that you've given us?
I call that the law of unintended consequences.
And it's like, oh, with affordable housing, like, is it better that we put electric car charging spaces in for each one and raise the cost by $5,000-$10,000 per unit for, or $100,000 a unit if you want high capacity charging stations? Or do we make it transit centric because 60% of the people don't have cars in affordable housing, 40%. So like, then we start to say like, oh, maybe the process doesn't have to be this like Waymo solution, like high tech solution. Maybe it's
Well, the thing that's interesting about cars and this all the EV stuff is all of our facilities are going to be overparked, I think, in the next 10 years. As the self-driving technology becomes more prevalent, I think it's going to be cheaper to use like Uber or Lyft with the self-driving cars than it will be to own a car. And so people will just start naturally moving that way. And so all these parking, we're going to be way overparked everywhere if people don't actually own cars and they rent them every time they use them.
We are already way overparked everywhere, but
I think there's five parking spaces for every car in the country, something like that.
I think that's one that I personally see a lot of. I photograph most of the affordable housing projects, so I see them after they're built and occupied, and generally the land is about two-thirds parking, one-third building, and it's generally quite empty. I think we'll lean on Jim heavily for a lot of this because I hear from the architects, but so many of the things I don't know that we can approach, like HUD requiring a certain amount of closets or closet space or things like that, that I feel like are arbitrary, but I don't think we can affect that.
We can. I just have to go through a different group. I mean, there's a working group at ADOH, like the HUD mandatory design guidelines. That's hard to change. That's national. Locally, with there's mandatory design guidelines for the LIHTC program, and there's a public. Actually, there's going to be a public feedback session next Friday. So for those of you who don't know, the Arizona Affordable Housing Conference is next week. It's Wednesday through Friday. And the last day, Friday, usually at noon, they'll do a public hearing. Well, they'll go through the QAP and solicit comments from the public on the QAP. And so if there are things that you think are onerous or need to change, that would be the place to do it. And then you can always submit them in writing as well. And they're pretty good about listening to all that stuff and making those changes.
I mean, I've read the QAP, but I don't understand a lot of it. So I would need you to point, like, hey, this is a thing that's onerous, because I have no context for what
Yeah.
onerous, to be honest.
Well, there's been some things in the QAP that were anti-Tucson. So, like, one of them was it had to be within a certain distance, like a mile, of a major employment center where a single employer had more than, I don't remember the number, 1,000 employees or something. And the problem was it said a single employer. So if you're right next to the Tucson Mall, obviously there's more than 1,000 employees in the Tucson Mall, but they're all separate employers. And so you couldn't use that as a large employment base next to the apartments. And so Tucson just doesn't have that many employers that meet that criteria, which seriously limited the available land.
And also, are the folks who are going to live there necessarily have workforce entrance to those jobs? That's crazy. Like, they may not be skilled enough to get those jobs or whatever.
At the Tucson Mall, most of
Well,
them.
at the
You're
Tucson Mall,
saying
they
like,
probably could, but I mean, like
yeah. Like,
one large
yeah, I mean,
employer
if
with
you're
a
next to
specific.
Raytheon, obviously that's, yeah. Yeah.
You're overqualified for low income housing, probably, if it's one of those large institutional thousand.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was an example of something that was kind of Tucson had a pretty significant disadvantage. And so they changed it. So they said more than 1,000 employees at any given location versus from a single employer. That was a change that they made to
That's
help Tucson.
helpful.
Well, you said this is happening next week, you said
Next
the
Friday.
okay, maybe I'll try and reread the
But
QAP.
it's up in Phoenix. You might be there might be a dial-in like a remote, but I always get a lot of value out of just sitting there and listening because you listen to all the developers and the feedback that they have, and it kind of clues you in on what are all the issues out there surrounding the QAP. So just listening to everybody kind of talk, not necessarily even talking, but just listening to everybody and the questions that they have and the comments is very valuable.
Okay.
Yeah.
Elaine, what would you like to do at this point?
Girl, I just became chair. What are you doing? You can't make me facilitate right away.
I think you should make a motion of some sort. Just kidding.
No, yeah.
Well,
Great.
I think we've got like two or three good agenda items for the next meeting. Hopefully you guys are okay pushing it a week.
Pushing the meeting or pushing the agenda item for you to the next one?
Well, pushing the next meeting back 1 week so I can participate.
So it was
Okay, so
September 8th. That would be September 17th.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, 15th.
September 15th.
September 15th.
Does that work for everybody?
I can do that.
Yeah, it works for me.
I would prefer that because I've got another event to go on the 8th that I now can go to if I don't have to do this on the 8th. So pushing the 15th is good for me.
I'll have to leave a little bit early.
Okay.
I moved around stuff to be able to attend this Tuesday one, so if it gets knocked off, I have other commitments. Okay.
Okay.
So Elaine, you're good. Alan, you're good. Logan, you're good. Jim, you're good for the.
Are there any members who are not in attendance today in this subcommittee?
Jay and Maggie was on this committee, but Maggie is no longer in the commission, and her replacement will be Bill Mackey, and hoping he will join this committee.
Okay.
I haven't seen Jay in a long time, in part because I've not been around, but I don't know, is he still participating or what's his status?
Yes, he wasn't at the I don't want to say the meeting last month, the one I watched, but earlier this month. But he's still active.
Okay, good.
Yeah. He's our fearless leader. I want to make
Yeah, I
sure.
thought so, but I just hadn't seen him. And again, that's because I wasn't around.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Unlimited. This is the year.
So, Elaine, I think you have consensus to move the meeting to the 15th.
Plastic.
Great.
Myself.
Does that require a motion?
Don't believe so.
Let's just too
Okay.
much. Okay. Great. That sounds good. So we moved it to the 15th.
Same time.
Do we have anything else on our agenda right now, or are we good to
That's
adjourn?
it. There are no members, there's no one in the audience, so there's no need to have a call to audience.
There was somebody in the audience
There
before.
was. We have two space staff
Oh, I
members.
see. Okay.
Hi, staff members. I didn't even see them here. Who are they?
Whatever, but the
Amanda
participants is, yeah,
Grant and
Amanda and Camilla.
oh my gosh, cute. Hi, Amanda, Camilla.
Camilla.
I'll see you in person next time I pester the planning division.
Okay. So the
Very
next
well.
steps are this committee has been moved back to the
Okay.
15th.
Yeah.
You have a full commission meeting on September 3rd, again at the Ward 6. And I promise I will submit the agenda to the clerk's office to make it legal.
You'll do something else in the future that was wrong, that though, but it won't be that, I'm sure. You'll get those done.
Thank you, Ellen.
And yeah, I guess just folks percolate on the thing, on the ideas you have, and let's bring them all together and we'll facilitate some kind of activity on prioritizing those things for the work plan. And I probably will send out some stuff prior just to make sure we all have a shared understanding of kind of the landscape of stuff happening in the community.
And again, Elaine, we'll work together on that, okay?
Yeah, that sounds good. Okay, do I have to adjourn or can we
You can
just
call the meeting an end. Go ahead, Elaine.
Do I just say the meeting is over?
Meeting is adjourned.
Usually what I said, Elaine, is without objection, we will adjourn. And if somebody objects, then you have to put it up for a vote.
Thank you, Jim.
Without objection, we will adjourn.
No objection here.
I'm ready to go.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, everyone.
All right.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you, Elaine, for taking chair. And thank you, Netta, for keeping us organized.
Thank you, everyone.